Okay, welcome back to Shmuel Beis. So we are learning Perek Hey, and I believe we're up to Pasuk Yud Gimel, if I'm not mistaken. Pasuk Yud Gimel, and again at the beginning of the Perek, we find that we have the story with the Yevusi, that finally David leaves Hebron and he comes to conquer Yerushalayim. Yevusi is settled in Yerushalayim. He conquers Yerushalayim, makes Yerushalayim his capital, and we learned about the that conquest at the beginning of the Perek, and then at the very end of last week, we learned about Hiram Melech Tzor, who sends these messengers to David to build him a palace, and then David recognizes that this is it. He's the king, he's established, he's not only recognized by all the Jewish people now, but he's recognized even by the surrounding nations, by this king, this Hiram Melech Tzor. And he recognizes that the whole purpose of his melucha is for Klal Yisrael. It's not for him, it's for Klal Yisrael. Okay, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayikach David od pilagshim v'nashim miYerushalayim acharei bo'o mechevron. So after he arrives from Hebron, he marries more wives and more pilagshim. What are pilagshim? Those are women that there was some level of, the Mefarshim explained, there's some level of kiddushin. There is some level of a halachic relationship, but there's no ksuba involved. So it's not a full-fledged marriage in the sense of a regular wife. That's the nashim. Nashim are regular wives. The pilagshim are kind of like pseudo-halachic wives. You know, there's something of a wife, but not exactly a full-fledged wife in the full halachic sense. And he... concubine, exactly, that's how it's translated into English. And he marries these women, and this is done in Yerushalayim. Vayivaldu od David banim uvanos, and he has more children, more sons and daughters. Right before Marv, I just glanced at the bottom of the article, they quote the Rabbag, I hadn't seen it, who in the Rabbag says that once he, this is following up on the last pasuk, that once he realized that his malucha was now established, his kingdom was established, so he thought to himself, okay, I have to now focus on my family and establish my family. And also, maybe one of these children are going to be my heir, the heir to the throne. So he had more children, you know, hoping that one of them would be a worthy heir to the throne. Of course, we know that Shlomo eventually takes over, but, you know, as we'll see, that's not so simple in terms of what happens here.
Rabbi, it says that a king can only have 18 wives.
Oh.
Plus his concubines.
Exactly.
And then I was reading that David had over 400 children.
Okay, so yeah.
He was waiting for one of them to be...
to be king. Yeah, so the 400 out of the I didn't see that in the Mefarshim, but I guess there's the Medrash that says that he had 400. In terms of the wives, that is something that the Mefarshim do discuss, because there's a pasuk in Devarim Perek Yud Zayin, pasuk Yud Zayin, that says, "Velo yar belo nashim," that a king is not supposed to have too many wives. Right, it's not good. V'lo yasur levavo. Right, a person, you know, a king has too many wives, he's going to be pulled in all different directions, and he's the king. He needs to be focused on what he's doing. He can't be swayed, you know, this way and that way. So how did this not violate v'lo yar belo nashim? So the Radak says that Chazal tell us lo yarbe means you can't have more than 18. 18 is okay, but you can't have more than 18. And the reason, the way that they learn that is that in Shmuel Beis Perek Yud Beis, so in a few prakim, so the pasuk says, Nasan the Navi is talking to David, and he says, "Va'ed nalecha es beis adonecha v'yas neshe adonecha b'chekecha," that I'm going to give you the house of your master, the daughter, the wives of your master, "Va'ed nalecha es beis Yisrael v'Yehuda v'osif alecha kahena v'chahena." I'm going to add kahena v'chahena, like these and like these. So they said that at that time, he had six wives in Hebron. In Hebron, he had six wives. And therefore, when he came to Yerushalayim, he was promised for kahena v'chahena, right? Six with another six and another six. So that's the total of 18. So that's where we get this number of 18 from. And that's the maximum that a king can have. More than 18, he's not supposed to have.
More than 18 wives, or he had 18?
Shlomo HaMelech, I think, had more than 18, and he had a reason why he thought that was okay. In the end, it wasn't, and that's what caused him to have some problems. But we'll We'll learn that when we get to it down the line. But yeah.
Michal was
included? Oh, okay.
Because
so.
There's a question about her
yes.
Back in the
right. So
if
a court.
Married,
yeah, yeah. Okay, so the Mefarshim discussed this a little bit, and the Radak assumes that Michal is included in the 18, even though Michal is not mentioned
in the 6.
In the 6, right. But Egla is mentioned. If you remember, we learned that Egla was Michal, so maybe Michal is really Egla, and that's one of the 6 that he married in Chevron. And then the Radak points out that later, when David flees from Avshalom, so it says that he left 10 Pilagshos back in Yerushalayim to protect the house. And we know he married 2 more wives. So this was the 6 in Yerushalayim, plus the 2 wives he married in, I'm sorry, the 6 in Hebron, plus 2 wives that he married in Yerushalayim. That's 8 wives. And then plus the 10 Pilagshim. So that's an added, that's 18 altogether. Between the Pilagshim and the wives, that's 18 altogether. One of the 2 in Yerushalayim is Bathsheba, which we're going to learn about. Right? Bathsheba is one of the 2 that he marries in Yerushalayim. He's not married to her yet.
Why did he need the Pilagshim if he had the wives?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. So the Pasuk says in Pasuk Yudalit, just now lists off the names of his children. V'yele shemos ha'yilodim lo b'Yerushalayim, Shamua v'shova v'nasan u'shlomo, v'yivchar, Pasuk Tezva, v'yivchar v'elishua, v'nefeg v'yofia, Pasuk Tezayin, v'elishama, v'el yada, Ve'eli Folet. So these are the names that are listed here. The Mefarshim point out, the Radak points out, these are all the names of the sons of his wives, not the sons of the Pilagshim. The children of the Pilagshim are not mentioned. Also, there's no daughters mentioned here, even though the Pasuk says, Banim uvanos. So this is not an exhaustive list of children. And the Metzudas David says this is also not really in order, because Shlomo really came first. And then the other 3 sons of Bathsheba. So really, it's Shlomo first, and then Shamua v'Shova v'Nasan. So there's all these questions here. There's some children, because David's children are also listed in Divrei Hayamim, and there's a couple of children that are mentioned in Divrei Hayamim and not mentioned here. So the question is, why aren't they mentioned? Why are they mentioned in Divrei Hayamim, not mentioned here? So some say maybe they died young. Some say maybe they died when they didn't have any children. So maybe that's why they weren't listed. Okay, but this is a list, and you'll compare and contrast to the list in Divrei Hayamim, and the Mefarshim discuss some of those differences. Okay, so now comes the drama of the parak here. Pasuk Tezayin, Vayishmeu Plishtim ki Moshchu es David l'melech al Yisrael. So the Plishtim here, that David was anointed the king over the Jewish people. Now all of the Plishtim come up to, literally, the Vakesh of David is to seek him. Okay? You know, the question is, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to kill him? Are they trying to do something else? Vayishma David, Vayered El HaMetzuda. David hears that the Plishtim are coming, and he goes down to the Mitzuda. Down to the Mitzuda. Now, the Malbim understands that this initial approach of the Plishtim was not so violent. This wasn't, their intention was not for violence when they first came up. The Malbim says that at first, the Plishtim always thought David was a kind of a friend. Because if you remember, David, for some time, had been hanging out in Gass with Achish, right, who was one of the kings, one of the governors, the kings of the Plishtim. And they thought he was, at peace with Achish, and he was an enemy of Shaul, who was the Jewish king. So all of a sudden they hear that now David became the Jewish king. So they're thinking to themselves, what's going on here? You know, is he our friend? Is he our enemy? And they first go up really just to see, is he going to subjugate himself to us, just like he was with Achish? He had a treaty. He was kind of on our side. So maybe he'll subjugate, you know, Bnei Yisrael to us, to the Plishtim, and he'll pay us taxes. And we're okay with that. So they weren't necessarily looking for war, looking for battle right away. That's why, according to the Malbim, that's why he initially goes up to. That's why the Plishtim initially go up to greet him.
My Maimonides takes a completely different approach.
Yeah.
They say that they were afraid of David
because right.
he had killed Goliath,
mm-hmm.
and that his intention was to wage war.
Yeah.
And that they were afraid of that because it says that that Solomon killed thousands, but David killed tens of thousands.
Shaul, yeah, right. He Shaul ba'alaf of the David b'rivavosa.
So because of that, right. They were afraid that right. he was going to try and make war against them.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So that's, again, this is what I mentioned was really just the Malbim's approach. But the Radak says, no, said David actually went to, he went to fight them. They heard that David was taking over and they were not very happy. And they thought that, okay, David is now, we see David's not on our side. David's going to attack us. And they went to attack him first. And in fact, the Radak says, that's why the Pasuk says, I'm sorry, the Mitzvah David says this, I apologize. Vayalu kol plishtim levakesh es Yisrael. What do you mean all the plishtim? This was a gigantic force. Why? Because they knew how strong of a warrior David was. They knew that this would not be simple. And therefore they came up with their entire camp, with their entire force. They all came out to fight. David went down to fight them. Right? Vayalu kol plishtim, they come up. Vayishma David vayerid ala mitzuda. So now the question is, where exactly is this mitzuda? So the Radak seems to say that the Mitzuda was some sort of a fortified tower that was a little bit lower than Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim, remember, is on a hill. So David is Vayered, Vayishma David, Vayered Ela Mitzuda. He's coming down from Yerushalayim down to this fortified tower that's in between him and the Plishtim. And it's interesting, the Radak is a little sensitive to this because on the one hand we hear here we're talking about Vayered Ela Mitzuda. We'll see in a second that David in Pasuk Yutes asks Hashem, should I go up? So the Radak is struggling. Is he going up? Is he going down? What's happening here with the Vayered, Vayha'ale? Why is he going up and going down? So he suggests that maybe really the, we'll see. Let's hold on on a second. I think we'll understand it a little better in a moment. The Mitzuda David says that why did he go down to the Mitzuda? To strengthen himself before asking Hashem if he should fight. He's going to ask Hashem if he should fight, but first he wants to be mechazek himself and his people, so he goes down to this Mitzuda. The Malbim understands the Mitzuda is a different place. The Mitzuda is some sort of a fortress that's all the way down in the desert, closer to where the Plishtim is, not near Yerushalayim the way that the Radak understands. And that's what he says. That's why it says Vayera, that he went down, because he goes down all the way to that place. We had Mitzuda earlier. Yeah. Now, so that's how the Radak understands. But again, the word Mitzuda just means a fortress. So it could mean more than one location. And that's why the Mefarshim are struggling to understand which Mitzuda was this. Is this the same Mitzuda we were talking about? The Mitzudas David, the Ir David, right? Or is this some other Mitzuda? And that seems to be the machlokas between the Radak and the Malbim. It's interesting. The Radak also points out that this is when David composed the second Perek of Tehillim. Because Perek Beis in Tehillim, Perek Beis, Pasuk Aleph begins, Lama rog shu goyim l'umim yegurik. That why are the goyim coming with emotion and the other nations are full of vanity, full of nothing. And the Radak says that this was when the Plishtim were coming out to do battle with him, that he composed this Perek in Tehillim. It's just an interesting thing. We haven't really talked about it much, but you could really give a whole class about the Tehillim, combining Tehillim with David's life and all of the different ups and downs in David's life, and see at what point he composed the different Prakim and what they were referring to. It's a fascinating thing, but that's what you mentioned that to me once. But that's what the Radak says, the Perek Beis. Was David composed this at this time when he was being attacked by the Plishtim? You also see that, just David's frame of mind, that he's being attacked by the Plishtim and he does go and to prepare for battle, but at the same time, he's also composing these, holy words of praise to Hashem as he's going out to battle. So David obviously is a very special and unique individual. Perek Yudches, Pasuk Yudches, Uflishtim Ba'u, Vayinotshu be'emek rifa'im. So the Plishtim come. Vayinotshu, Rashi says, means that they were spread out, they were scattered, and they spread out over Emek Rifaim. Now, what is this Emek Rifaim? Emek Rifaim is a place that was close to Yerushalayim, right? They're coming close to Yerushalayim. The Malbim says that they heard that David, you know, everybody's hearing what the other one is doing, right? So first David hears that the Plishtim are coming, so he goes down. Then the Plishtim hear that David goes down, so they're coming up, right? So this is, they're all, you know, calibrating themselves based on what they hear about the other. Pasuk Yates, Vayishal David ba'Hashem le'mor. So David now asks Hashem. He consults, presumably with the Urim v'Tumim, right? Even though it doesn't say that in the Pasuk, but that's always what, you know, consulting Hashem means in these contexts. Ha'ela el Plishtim. Should I go up and fight against the Plishtim? Hasitneim v'yadi. Will you give them into my hands, right? Will you make me victorious over the Plishtim? Vayomer Hashem el David, alei. So Hashem responds to David through the Urim v'Tumim. Yes, go up, go conquer them. Kinason etain es haplishtim biyadecha. I will allow you to be victorious over the Plishtim. And again, here, which I mentioned before, the why in Pasuk Yud Zayin, it says, Vayered el Metzuda, the David is going down, and now David's asking, Ha'ale, or Ha'ela, I'm sorry, should I go up? So the Radak says that really the Plishtim were in a high place, this place called Baal Pratzim, which we'll talk about in a minute. So they were in this high place, but since the camp was so large, their camp spilled down into Emek Rephaim. Emek Rephaim is a valley. So they were kind of on a mountain, this mountain of Baal Pratzim, and then their camp was so large that it spilled down, you know, down the mountain into this valley of Emek Rephaim. That valley was right outside of Yerushalayim. And again, the Malbim, according to his approach, says, no, David was all the way in the desert at this point. Right, he was in the desert at this Mitsuda, and now he's coming back up to fight against the Plishtim in Emek Rifai. So that's, of course, we know the name Emek Rifai even from today in Yerushalayim, but it's based on this pasuk in Shmuel Aleph.
When it's Shmuel Beis. That David spoke with Hashem. Is that like when Moshe Rabbeinu spoke with Hashem?
Not in the same way. Moshe had a unique method of communicating with Hashem. It was like speaking, you know, like I'm speaking to you. That's how Moshe would speak to Hashem. All the other Nevi'im, the Rambam says all other Nevi'im did not speak in that way. They all spoke, they all received these images and dreams, and they had to interpret it. It was a whole different thing. Now, David is not even a Navi, right? David's a Melech, and he's not really a Navi. Shmuel was the Navi. Nasan, we're going to learn about God, is, you know, the whole different Nevi'im here. But David was not really a Navi. So this message is through the Urim V'Tumim. Right, this is through the Urim V'Tumim. It's not really a direct prophetic communication.
Wouldn't David have asked before he went down rather than when he went up?
So it's a good question, right? Shouldn't David have asked right away before he even goes down? So I think that's what the Mitzudas David is coming to answer. That he says that really, when according to the Mitzudas David, when he went Vayered El HaMitzuda, when he went down to this fortress, it wasn't to go out to battle yet. In other words, he says he was doing it to be mechazek himself, like to strengthen himself before, to see if he was fitting, if he was ra'ui, I guess, to go out to battle. That's the best of it understands it. So it could be that this was even some sort of spiritual preparation, you know, going down to the Mitsuda. Let me look again just at the language. Yeah, the Mitzudas David says, El Mitzuda El Migdal Oz Lihischazek Bo B'Terem Yishal B'Hashem. To strengthen himself, it's not clear. It does sound a little bit more like he's strengthening himself physically, you know, but he wasn't going out to battle yet. You know, he was maybe preparing himself for battle. Maybe this was training exercises, you know, that he was doing to get ready for battle. And then before he would go out, you know, listen, we got to get ready before we actually go out. Let's ask Hashem if this is the right thing to do. Okay, Pasuk Chav, Vayavo David beval pratzim, and David came to Baal Pratzim, and again, this is how the Radak understands that they were at this place called Baal Pratzim, and then the camp extended down into Emek Rifaim. Rashi understands Baal Pratzim is the plains of Pratzim. Vayakim the Mitzudas David says that this is not really the name of the place. The name of the place is really Emek Rephaim, which is what we've been talking about. Baal Pratzim is the name that it will get at the end based on what happens here. So that's how Mitzudas David understands. It's not yet called Baal Pratzim. So it's a question in the Mefarshim, is it already Baal Pratzim, and these are two areas that are adjacent to each other, Baal Pratzim and Emek Rufaim, are they one and the same? Really, it's Emek Rufaim, and it will be called Baal Pratzim. Okay, but he comes to Baal Pratzim, Vayakem Sham David, and David defeats the Plishtim in this Baal Pratzim, Vayomer Paratz Hashem Es Oivai Lefanai, and he says, Hashem has Paratz. Paratz is like burst open. Hashem has kind of, you know, suddenly scattered my enemies from before me. Keferetz mayim, just like water bursts forth. And the Mefarshim understand, you know, you imagine you have a river that's a raging river, and all of a sudden it just bursts over its banks. It just, you know, it just suddenly overflows and overtakes its banks. And that's how David defeated the Plishtim, right? Just all of a sudden, this was a sudden, instantaneous boom, just like an explosion, where David just completely defeats them. Al-Kain Karashim Amakomahu Baal Pratzim. And that's why it was called Baal Pratzim, based on this imagery of this water bursting forth. Now, the Radak says, you know, this is David. You know, obviously, it's a beautiful recognition of the fact that Hashem is helping him. But David was saying that there's no way I could have accomplished this without Hashem. This was a gigantic force, right? This was a supernatural victory. This was the miraculous victory. It was not a natural strategic victory. It was a supernatural victory. And it was only because Hashem was with me. It was direct help from Hashem. And that's what enabled me to defeat this such a large force of the Plishtim. And that's why they called the place Baal Pratzim. Okay?
Question. Yeah. Did David actually kill them, or did he scare them into retreating?
Good question. It doesn't say. It says Vayakem. Vayakem means, and he smote, I think it would be a good translation, right? He's, you know, so presumably that means that he killed many of them, right, and the rest retreated. You know, I don't think it's not clear. It doesn't tell us here how many people he killed, you know, or anything like that. But this, it does, the imagery of the bursting water, you know, kind of conjures up a rousing defeat, you know, of the Plishtim at the hands of David. So, you know, how many were killed, I don't know, but presumably this was a rout. Okay, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayazvu Sham, this is just interesting Pasuk. Vayazvu Sham es Atzabehem. So they left their, what's Atzabehem? They left their idols, right? The Plishtim, you know, they bring their Getchkas, they bring their idols with them to battle, and they were routed, and they just, they left their idols. They left them behind. Vayisa'im David va'anashav. And David and his men, Vayisa'im. So what's Vayisa'im? So literally, Vayis, the word Vayisa'im normally would be translated as, and they carried them. And David and his men carried the idols. They took them. Now, it's a little strange, you know, why would they be taking them? So the Radak says, no, Vayisa'im doesn't mean that they took them. It means that they burned them. And he brings a couple of proofs, one or two proofs from other psukim, where this shoresh is used to mean that they burned them. And he points out also that in Divrei Hayomim, it says Vayisrafum. It says that he burned them. That's what the pasuk says in Divrei Hayomim. When it talks about this battle, it says that he burned the idols. So the Radak says Pashat Pshat is that's what it means here too, and it's just using a different word. But this word can also mean and he burned them. However, Chazal, right, obviously pick up on this discrepancy between here and Divrei Hayomim. And Divrei Hayomim, it says he burned the idols, and here it says he picked up the idols. So what's the difference? So Chazal tell us in the Medrash that really at first he was burning the idols, right? Really at first he was burning the idols. Why was he burning them? Because he can't get benefit from Avodah Zarah. It's Avodah Zarah. So it's Aser Bahana. You're not allowed to benefit from Avodah Zarah. However, there was a certain plishti by the name of Itai Hagiladi. And Itai Hagiladi sees that the plishtim are being defeated. And he says, you know what? I'm on the wrong side of history here. And he quickly jumps over to the other camp. And he says, I surrender. I want to join you guys. And he joins David and his men. I don't know if he converts or doesn't convert. But he joins David and his men. He's a plishti. And when he comes, what the halacha is that if an Oved Avodah Zarah nullifies the Avodah Zarah, then they lose their status as Avodah Zarah, and they're no longer prohibited it in benefit. So Itai Agiladi comes across, he joins the Jewish forces, and now there's all these idols here, and he's mevatel, he nullifies all of these idols, and he says they're all null and void, they're all nothing. They're no longer Avodah Zarah, and they're just now, you know, carvings and statues and stone and whatever, and there's nothing to them anymore. Once he does that, they lose their status as Avodah Zarah, and now one is permitted to benefit from them. So then, Vayisa'im. So then David and his men take them. Right? I'm sorry? I don't know, but they'll use them for something. You know, they'll use them as a paperweight, or they'll hold open their door with them. I don't know exactly what they'll do with them. Firewood, if they're wood. Well, again, the original burning was to destroy them, right? Because if they're prohibited in benefit, then there's nothing we can do with these, so we have to destroy them, right? What else are we going to do with them? So they set them on fire. Then once this Itay Agiladi came, I guess there was also some, you know, some of them might have been made from precious metals. They could use them. But if it's Avodah Zarah, you can't use them. You can't benefit from them, right? So once Itay Agiladi comes and he nullifies them, so then now they're allowed to benefit from them, so they take them. You know, maybe they'll melt them down and, you know, use them for something. So again, you know, I don't think they're setting them up in the shul. You know, I don't think they're setting them up in a way that would lead one to believe that they're worshiping them. But maybe they would use them for some other type of purpose. You know, like I said, maybe melting them down, or maybe, you know, using them, recarving them somehow and using, making them into something else. But that wouldn't be allowed if it was real Avodah Zarah. If it's real Avodah Zarah, you just got to get rid of it. You can't use it at all. So this was, you know, using it in some sort of permissible way. Okay. Now, the Plishtim, although they may be down, they're not out. And they decide to come back. They were knocked out, but they decide to come back. Pasuk Chav Beis, Vayosifu Od Plishtim La'alos. The Plishtim are trying to persevere, and they try to come back up. And Vayinachu Be'emek Rephaim. And once again, they come to Emek Rephaim, right, which is this place right outside of Yerushalayim. And they regroup and regather, and they try to attack David again. Why they didn't learn their lesson the first time, I'm not sure, but they were being persistent here.
So why did they were in Baal Paratzin, now they retreated, and now they're coming back?
Coming back to the same place.
Not Baal Paratzin, that doesn't...
So again, some of Farshim understand that Emek Rephaim and Baal Paratzin are really the same.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
And some say that there are two areas that are adjacent to each other. So either it's the same location or, you know, a similar, a nearby location. Chav Gimel. So David sees what's going on. He says, okay, should I go back? Right? Pasuk Chav Gimel. Vayishal David ba'Hashem. So David once again asks Hashem. Vayomer lo sa'aleh. And now interesting, Hashem responds, don't go up. Right? Don't go up to attack them. Rather, haseiv el acharehem. Go and get them from behind, right? Go encircle them, go from behind. Uvasalahem mimul bichaim. And approach them from across the bichaim. What are bichaim? Some of most of the Mefarshim understand bichaim were, it was a whole forest of trees, different types of trees. Maybe they were berry trees, according to the Radak. He says they were tusim. Maybe they were, some sort of berry tree, berry bushes or something like that. Emek habacha, right, might ring a bell from the pasuk. So that's also bichaim, is also these trees. And so why was Hashem telling him here, lo saleh, right? Don't go up, rather go behind. It's a whole different, a whole different approach here. So the Radak says, interestingly, that he told him, don't go to fight now, because it's not time for the Yeshua. Meaning everything has its appropriate time. And you have to recognize, though, that Hashem is teaching him a lesson. Right? Right now is not the opportune time. Why not? We have no idea. He didn't tell David why. He didn't tell David that, you know, this is not the right time because of X, Y, and Z. He just said, David, lo sala, this is not the right time. This is not the opportune time. And you see, you know, this alludes to something we talked about over Shabbos, that when it is the opportune time, things happen, chick-chock. Hashem takes care of business. But when it's not the opportune time, Hashem says, lo sa'aleh. Everything is cheshvent, right? Everything has a time. Lakol zman va'es, right? We say in the Megillah. Everything has the appropriate time. Everything has the proper time. But we have to consult with Hashem. You know, we don't have the Urim V'Tumim nowadays. So we consult with our leaders. We consult with our Gedolim. But we have to consult with our, you know, leaders. When is the right time for these things? So that's what David was doing. Before was the right time. David went and he defeated them. Now, Hashem says, lo saleh. Now it's not the right time. Now we'll see in a moment when it will be the right time.
He learned it by Shaul, because when Shmuel told him to wait, and he didn't.
Very good. Excellent.
Yeah.
So the Malbim says also, interestingly, that Hashem was, it sounds like from the Malbim, that Hashem is teaching David some military strategy here. Right? What's the military strategy? Listen, you know, last time you attacked them from the front. This is not a good idea now. Right? Because now they're watching. So now attack them from a different angle, a different approach. Okay? This time attack them from a side when they're not expecting it. Okay, Pasuk Chav Dalet. This is very interesting now. Vayhi keshamacha es kol tse'oda b'roshei habicha'im. And now, says the, so this is the message from the Urim V'tumim, that when you hear the kol tse'oda, the art scroll translates as when you hear a sound like marching, a marching sound, like tse'adim is steps. When you hear a marching sound, b'roshei habicha'im, at the tops of the trees, it's going to sound like marching. Oz techeratz. Then, the art scroll translate this as, then you shall shout. Some of the mafarshim understand that techeratz is from a language of like cut down. Right? Then you should attack. Then you should cut down. Ki oz yotza Hashem lefanecha lehakos b'machane plishtim. Because then, Hashem is going out before you to help you defeat the plishti camp. Now, what's this kol tse'ada? What's this sound of marching at the tops of the trees? You know, what's going on? So, one group of Mefarshim, Rashi is among them, who says that this was miraculous, and there were malachim being sent to help David defeat the Plishtim. Now, how would David know when it was the right time? How would David know when the malachim were there and he would be victorious? So this, the sound of the trees would be making would be the signal to David that the malachim are here. Now, even though malachim presumably can come very quietly, right? But this was like almost they were coming in a noisy fashion and disrupting all the trees. That would be the signal to David that the malachim were here. The malachim are here. Okay, now it's time to go to battle because the malachim are here. They're going to help us defeat the Plishtim. That's how Rashi understands. The Radak, interestingly, says that no, this was just a natural sound. This wasn't supernatural. This wasn't any type of miracle here. It was a natural sound of just, you know, wind blowing through the trees. However, says the Radak, that the Jewish army, when they heard this sound, and David said, okay, now you hear the sound, now let's go, they would interpret it as Malachim helping them out, and therefore that would give them chizuk. Because if you know that you got Malachim helping behind you, okay, I'm going to be confident. I'm going to fight with confidence because I know I have Malachim. And then they're going to be victorious. So according to Rashi, this was really miraculous and supernatural. The sound was really the sign of Malachim there. According to the Radak, no, there's no Malachim here, right? You're just fighting the battle on your own. Obviously, Hashem is helping you. But this was a trick to get the Jewish army to think that the Malachim were helping them. And then they would fight with more vigor and they would be able to defeat the Plishtim. That's how the Radak understands.
Rabbi, interesting. It says here that the means the trees with sounds were the branches were rustling.
Right.
Like the wind blows, like you said.
Right.
And that sound was to camouflage the sound of David's men marching.
Aha! It was the camouflage.
Together, right.
That's interesting. That's a little bit of a different interpretation. Very interesting. okay, so the Malbim. Kind of, interestingly, we have Rashi with the supernatural approach, we have the Radak with the more natural approach, and the Malbim combines the two. And the Malbim says that this was a combination of nature and miracle, that they were both at play. Number one, he says nature, that this was just real military strategy. You should attack when the wind is blowing in the trees. Why? Because you're going to attack from one side. Says the Malbim, the trees were on the other side. So if you attack from one side, and now the trees are making a marching sound because the wind is rustling the leaves on the other side, the Plishtim will think that they're being attacked from both sides, and they'll be even more scared, and that will help you defeat them.
If they're outnumbered.
So that's the natural approach, the military strategic approach. according to the Malbim. However, the miraculous approach is that the blowing, according to the Malbim, does represent Hashem also coming to do battle. So the blowing was twofold. It was miraculous, and it was also natural military strategy in order to do this. Now, the Mitzudas David says this here, the following, and the Malbim also says the following, and it's based on Chazal and a Yalkut Shimoni here in Shmuel Beis, was that also, this was also a test. This was also a test. Why? As Aaron pointed out, because Shaul was given very specific instructions by Shmuel, and he didn't listen to them. And if you remember, that was the beginning of Shaul's downfall. That as soon as he stops listening to Hashem, that's already the beginning of the downfall. And here, the reason why Hashem, through the Urim V'Tumim, told David, Lo Saleh, don't go up the way you went last time, but rather go around, wait patiently for the sound of the trees, and then you'll go. This was a test to David to see, are you going to listen to me? Which, and again, the instructions don't really make logical sense. Why should I wait? Why should I wait for the rustling of the trees? Right? It's not necessarily something so logical. But Hashem says, I want to know if you're going to follow my instructions. I want to know if you're going to follow me. And David here followed it to a T. Unlike Shaul. Right? And again, Shaul was a tzaddik. But Shaul made some mistakes. David wasn't making the same mistakes. David was following Hashem's instructions to the T. And he said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this with Hashem. And that was his emunah, that was his faith. In fact, Yalkut Shimoni says something fascinating. Just it develops the storyline in a fascinating way, and it says that the Bnei Yisrael went, and again they were instructed, don't attack until you hear the rustling of the trees, and the Plishtim are approaching, and the Yalkut Shimoni says that they got within Arba Amos, which is like 8 feet away. You know, the Plishtim are 8 feet away, okay? And now the Jewish army is yelling at David, you know, what should we do? Should we fire? You know, hold your fire, right? Literally, the Plishtim are 8 feet away. And here the Jewish soldiers say, you know, what are we doing here? We're going to get slaughtered. We're just standing here. We're not attacking. You know, we're going to get slaughtered. And David says to them that, no. He says, if you attack now, you will be killed. If you attack now, you will be killed, and then you're going to die reshaim, because you're not listening to Hashem. And he says, I would prefer mutov namus zakoim v'tzadikim velo namus reshaim. It's preferable that we die tzadikim, right? Listening to Hashem's will. If that's how Hashem wants us to die, then so be it. Rather than violate Hashem's will and die as reshaim, die as wicked people who are violating Hashem's will. And he says, no. We're going to look up for the sign that Hashem gave us. We're looking towards Hashem. That's it. That's how we're fighting this battle. And again, you know, the people are scared. The soldiers are scared. The Plishtim are 8 feet away from them. Right? But they're scared. But says the Pasuk, as soon as they look up to the trees, to Hashem, right away, the wind starts blowing, the trees start rustling. That's the signal. The Jewish army attacks. And they defeat the Plishtim, and it says that the Medrash concludes. Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu l'malachim. So Hashem turns to his malachim and he says, "Re'u ma bein David l'Shaul." Look at the difference between David and Shaul. Right? Shaul omed v'nishaburim v'tumim. Shaul asked, and what happened? The Plishtim came, and he left the Urim v'tumim, and he fled, and he ran away. But here, David, he's following my instructions to a T, even in the face of danger, even in the face of danger. Okay, now let's the last pasuk of Hey, Vayas David Kain Kasher Tzivo Hashem. So David follows exactly as Hashem commands him. Vayaches Plishtim Migeva Ad Boa Chagozer, and he defeats the Plishtim all the way from Geva to the approach of Gozer, two different locations. But you see again, the parak ends in this dramatic fashion where David, even in the face of danger, even in the face of the resistance from his men, and remember, Shaul, that was also something. Shaul says, "Oh, it was the people, right? It was the people. They pressured me." You know, those are the mistakes he made, and we see that these exact mistakes, Hashem is testing David to see: are you going to make the same mistakes as your predecessor, or are you going to be stronger? Are you going to follow me more closely? And we see that David passes the test at the end of the perek and defeats the Plishtim in a resounding defeat. Okay, we'll stop here for tonight.